Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
All right, so with this series, or actually, it's not even a series. It's a one-off, one and done.
Winner, go home.
Yeah, which is exciting for me, especially, you know, I love March Madness, so I think that format is just so unpredictable, and anything can happen. So yeah, you and I, we're going to talk about the trends and whatnot and what our strengths are and what we've done during the regular season. I just feel like it all goes out the window, right? In one game. Because weird things happen.
100% agree, right? Sabonis could start the game and hit three threes from the top of the key and just totally muck up what the Warriors want to do defensively. Or Klay Thompson could, you know, hit his first seven threes, or everyone could be struggling shooting, or Wiggins could pick up two early fouls defending Fox, and then where do the Warriors go? A lot of different things, right? So exactly.
Yeah, 100%.
But I think it's also a little unfortunate because I think the Warriors and Kings are two very exciting games to watch, or two very exciting teams to watch, that it's too bad that it comes down to a single game and not kind of a repeat series. Because I think most fans would probably prefer to watch the Warriors and Kings in a best of seven over, I don't know, maybe the Warriors and Oklahoma City Thunder even.
Well, I mean, from our perspective, we're kind of tired of playing the Warriors, actually. I mean, I know where you're coming from. It's just as far as the quality of play. There's never a dull moment when the Dubs and the Kings play. But yeah, we're kind of tired of seeing you guys, honestly. Especially, I just think there was a lot of trauma caused from that first round series last season. Yeah, that was wild. Not from my end, but I'm just talking about in general for the Kings fan base. It's kind of like, damn, the Dubs again. So, but you know, one narrative that we are going with is if we do win this game, you know, we could say that we got our lick back, and you know, revenge is always sweet if that does happen. So there's that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And who would you prefer in the second round, Lakers or Pelicans, in the second play-in game?
Well, obviously the Lakers. But again, because it's the postseason, whatever happened during the regular season almost doesn't matter. So we swept the Lakers this year. And the Pelicans swept us. So it's like this weird, really crappy triangle that we have going on. So yeah, it's awful because the Lakers, in my eyes, they seem to dominate them. And they dominate us, and then we dominate the Lakers. So, you know, who's to say that, you know, six times against the Pels won't be a charm for the Kings? I doubt it, though. They are so strong where we're weak.
Did you play them five times?
Yeah, because of the play-in tournament.
Oh,
the in-season tournament, okay, my bad. Tournament. So it's like, oh my gosh. For whatever reason, and every team does this against us on our own home floor. I'm assuming it's the sight lines. Maybe Golden 1 Center is just built too well, but everybody shoots better than their season average when they come to see us.
That's how we felt like it's been for the Warriors at home at Chase this season. Everybody comes into Chase and has their career nights. They're shooting career highs from threes throughout whatever numbers that they shoot on the season are their average or their career averages, and they just have the games of their lives against us at home.
Well, there you go. I guess we're not the only ones. And I know it's like that across the league, but it always seems to be amplified when it comes against the Kings. So my question for you is how has your team changed since we last met? So we last met in what, January, I believe.
Yeah. Well, Trayce Jackson-Davis is firmly entrenched as the starting center. I think in January, we were playing Draymond at the five. So that's the biggest thing, is shifting Draymond back to the four, TJD at the five, with a starting lineup rounded off with Curry, Thompson, and Wiggins. And so that's what I suspect will be the starting lineup for Tuesday. Although it is interesting because historically Looney has been really successful against Sabonis, but TJD just offers that vertical spacing offensively that Looney just doesn't have in his game.
So is that the main difference? Is that Trace is a lob threat and he's just more a little dynamic than Loon?
That and also just how they're utilizing Clay. Like, even though Clay starts, I think he's primarily as a starter being used to pull gravity. He isn't typically like in that first chunk of the first quarter or third quarters and with the starting group. He's not getting a bunch of shots, but then he plays with the second group and is really featured with Chris Paul running the backup point guard spot. And just that second lineup is really just meant for featuring Clay. Those are probably the two main differences since that January game. I think the first few games of the season when we played, the team looks a lot different because Pods Podjetski wasn't even really in the lineup.
Right.
And so he's coming off the bench now. He was starting for a while. He plays a pretty big role, but still like 20 to 25 minutes. But it's going to be interesting to see, because this is win or go home. What's Steve Kerr going to do? Is he going to go with what's been working over the last 30 games or so, where they've been kind of a completely different team than the first 50 games of the regular season? Or is he going to lean more on the vets and trust kind of Looney to do the job? I think it's just going to kind of depend on how things go early in the game and make adjustments from there.
Yeah. If anything, if there's a strength that I will say that the Dubs have is, I think Kerr makes adjustments quicker, I feel like, when it comes to rotations. What do you think?
I find myself arguing with people on Twitter so often that say he doesn't. It's hard to say. I think hindsight's always 20/20, which I think is the problem with a lot of basketball discourse, that we kind of look back after the fact of the game and said, well, you should have done this or you should have done that. And it's like, well, if that last shot had gone in and the loss had been a win, you wouldn't be saying anything. I personally think that, you know, Kerr's a human, he makes mistakes, but I wouldn't want anyone else coaching the Warriors than Steve Kerr. The decisions are being made as a group. It's not solely on Kerr that's pulling the trigger here. He's talking to Curry. Like, this is when everything's on the line, Curry's got as much say as anyone else does in this organization on how we're doing things, especially the second half adjustments. Maybe not as much like within a quarter, within minute to minute, but definitely at halftime, like, they're coming together and figuring out what we need to do. And I'm sure Chris Paul's a part of that as well. Draymond Green, like, these guys have been around long enough. They've been doing this long enough. They played, you know, important games, made it to the finals. Like, this isn't just Kerr saying, we're going to do this, and I don't care what you say or what you think.
Yeah, right on. And not only that, I feel like Pods has learned his role more since then as well. Right.
Yeah, 100%. He doesn't, you know, he's not going to score 30 points, but he's not going to get five turnovers either. He's going to play really hard. He's going to draw some charges. He's going to rebound. You know, he's a little bit undersized, and he gets his layups blocked at times. But I mean, he plays so hard, and he's just, he's a fierce competitor, and he's really confident.
Yeah, well, not only that, as a member of Draft Twitter, you know, I think we all know that his feel for the game is incredible as well. So he's just a really smart player for you guys.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of the things that I think a lot of Warriors fans fail to realize with some of the young developing players on the team, like Kuminga or Moody, is reasons why they weren't able to see more playing time earlier in their careers is they just got in the way on the floor. And when you're trying to play read and react offense and you're mucking up Curry's pass and relocate, that's just not going to fly. You're not going to find yourself on the floor that often if you can't figure out how to move and cut and and not just stand there and take up space.
Yeah, 100%. So with us, I think our main difference is Keon Ellis. As we all know, Monk has been out and then Herter got injured. So when Herter got injured, Keon Ellis was inserted into the starting lineup as our two guard. And yeah, we're just night and day. We're defensive first now. We're defense first. And the thing about Kevin Herter, unfortunately, is if his shooting wasn't on, he could possibly be played off the floor, depending on who their two guard is. And so with Keon, we know that even if his shooting is off, we actually are going to get defense. And he's arguably one of our top three defenders. And so, yeah, that's our biggest difference since we last met.
And yeah, of course, Monk has just been a Warriors killer.
Who?
Monk has just been a Warriors killer.
And then,
it's really
and
too
then
bad.
Monk is gone, right? So it's been a struggle. And then that, if there's any reason why the Kings fans are nervous, it's because of that. We lost our second on-ball creator in Malik Monk. So it's really just De'Aaron Fox. And then, you know, we're just going to have to figure out how to distribute our shots without Malik Monk. Because usually if our second unit was in a lull, Malik Monk was just instant offense. And we know what he could do. So, yeah, that's really hit us hard since his injury.
He was, even going back to the series last year, I feel like Kings were a little nervous in that first game, and Monk had an explosion off the bench, and I feel like he just really propped everyone up, like, hey guys, we got this. And even Fox fed off of that. It really felt like he was kind of the injection of confidence into the Kings roster, like, hey, we're here, we belong. You know, despite being the three seed, and you guys were so dominant the entire season last year. So obviously it's a huge blow. Warriors going to be without GP2. I think that hurts us a lot as well, as far as having different options for defending Fox. I'm a little bit concerned with, you know, what the Warriors can do if Wiggins gets into foul trouble, or just if Steve Kerr's going to just play Wiggins the entire game that Fox is on the floor. I'm sure Mike Brown is going to roll out Fox there for as long as possible. I know he can play big minutes. And I don't think Steph Curry can get out there for 42 to 44 minutes. I don't know. You think that it'll end up being that type of game where you just basically ride your starters as long as possible?
Yeah, it depends on who has a hot hand. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, Fox usually gets his. He rarely has. I mean, granted, he has his inefficient nights, and that's everybody, right? I'm sure. I know Steph does as well, but we still need them in the game because they're our biggest threat. So yeah, it'll be a game of cat and mouse. I know that's how it was in the last series where Kerr staggered Curry's minutes to keep him away from Davion. So it'll be interesting, because when last year we only had Davion, now this year, because De'Aaron's defensive acumen has like really taken off this year, we could throw Fox on him for a little bit for stretches, right? We don't want Fox on ball Steph too often, but every now and then he'll be able to do it. And then we could actually throw Key on there, and then Keegan Murray as well at the point of attack. So defensively, we have options, which is what we never had last year. And even in January, Keon has emerged. So yeah, that's pretty exciting for us. But so are you saying that Wiggins, is he still getting his legs from under him, or?
No, I'm just saying that after Wiggins, the Warriors don't have reliable point of attack defense against a player like Fox.
So Kuminga doesn't do that?
He's done it at times, but not reliably. Kuminga has moments where he can be like a highlight reel defensively, but he has not yet proven to be a consistent defensive player. He typically does better on ball, but off ball he gets lost, or he has mistakes. He has lapses. Where he misses assignments or rotations, or he reaches and gets caught reaching. picks up fouls. Kuminga also missed 6 games. He returned about a week ago and had like an incredible game against the tanking Utah Jazz, where he put up 21-10-4. But then, and that was like his first game back, and he was like, oh, he's back, he's ready to go. Since then, though, he's really, really struggled, and that included another game against the Jazz that closed out our regular season. So I'm not really sure where Kuminga's at. He took a really tough fall in that Utah Jazz game and had like a pelvic bruise. So, I mean, he's not on the injury report, but he's certainly not 100%. And since he missed those 6 games, that's when Steve Kerr kind of shifted him to coming off the bench and starting TJD more. So now Kuminga's playing off the bench and trying to figure all of that out. So there's some question marks there. I don't think that Dub Nation necessarily feels like they really know how Kuminga's going to fit in. And this play-in game is going to be really interesting to see if it clicks for him and he figures it out, or what happens, because he obviously has the physical tools, the athleticism, and he's one of our better, if not our best, guys at getting downhill and getting to the rim. But in the way that officiating has changed in the last 3 months, and guys who are initiating contact are typically not being rewarded like they used to be, Kuminga oftentimes is finding himself driving into trouble and drawing a lot of contact and not being rewarded for it and not being able to finish. And those kind of shot turnovers fuel the other team in transition. And he struggles. He's not a knockdown shooter yet. So if we don't get him out in transition and get some easy buckets, and he's not able to drive to the rim, and he's not knocking down shots, and he's not locking guys up defensively, it's a little bit of a challenge for him.
That's interesting, because I recall our...
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
First 2 meetings this season, like, every Kings fan was looking at Kuminga. It's like, oh yeah, he's taking a leap, and it looks like the game slowed down for him. So,
and it totally did. He had like 20 to 30 games in this regular season where it's like he's our second best player right now. But since then, Klay Thompson's reemerged, and Klay looks as sharp as he's ever looked since before going down from injury. He's finally accepted his role, and he's picking his shots and reading the defense and taking smarter shots and not forcing it. And I think Kuminga, since getting injured and losing his starting spot, is trying to figure out what that means and finding ways to contribute off the bench.
Right. Yeah, that's what we thought. I was watching him and I was like, yeah, this guy looks like he's taking a leap. And so good for him, and good for Klay as well. His press conferences were heartbreaking when he was struggling. And so good for him for figuring it out. And, you know, I think, you know, people who watch ball know how good of a player he was. And we all know those rough months were an aberration for him. And sure, he's lost probably half a step or two, but I think we all know how dangerous he could be. Totally ignitable player. Could probably give you 30 or 40 if everything goes right, if he's feeling it. So I still stress out. I mean, he had a buzzer beater against us this year, I feel like.
Right. He did.
So it's
that,
like,
that was in the midst of that Warriors closing games, right? It was like Steph had a buzzer beater, and then Klay had that buzzer beater over you guys. And it's like start of the season, we're like, yeah, we're here, we're on it. And then Warriors like led the league in clutch games by the end of the season. I think 48 clutch games on the regular season, and so many games where down the stretch we couldn't pull it off. And it was, you know, kind of to be expected. You weren't going to continue to hit game winner after game winner after game winner, but also a bigger issue and theme for the Warriors has been not winning the meat of the games, as Steph Curry called it in this past summer, where you don't take care of business when you should. Maybe you built a 15-point lead in the second quarter and then you give most of it away and you go into halftime up one, or something like that. Like, you need to better manage the game so it doesn't come down to the last 5 minutes where it's like anyone's game. The Warriors just did a really bad job of doing that this season, despite having a veteran core.
No, it happens. I really think that when it comes to elite cores or teams that have had success, they start feeling themselves, or maybe they just don't lock in against quote unquote lesser teams or teams that they're favored against. So do you think that's one of the main reasons why they finished 10th this year?
Klay Thompson and Andrew Wiggins struggles early in the season. Draymond Green missing about 20 games from suspension. And then, yeah, just not locking in and understanding what it takes to win. They actually did pretty good at beating the teams they were supposed to beat early in the season. They lost a few close ones in the last 30 games or so that definitely hurt and are part of the reason why they finished 10th. I think they lost a back-to-back to San Antonio and Chicago with about 3 weeks left in the regular season. But, you know, when Wiggins and Klay Thompson were off, it was no spacing on the floor, no defense. It just wasn't a lot going right for them. And this team doesn't really go anywhere without Draymond Green. He's the heartbeat. He's just so important to what they do offensively, defensively, at least until they find some other guys to kind of take the weight off his shoulders. And yeah, those were at least a few reasons. What about the Kings? I feel like you guys got off to a really good start the first chunk of the season. Obviously, we just talked about losing Herter, losing Monk. Can you speak to kind of what you feel like were some of the challenges in the last few weeks and kind of maybe some slippage in the standings?
Well, the latest slippage has just been because of Monk and his injury. So, like I said before, anytime you lose your second best or arguably first best on ball creator at times, you're going to struggle. Right now, this team reminds me of those old Jazz teams with Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, where, if you remember, it was really only Donovan Mitchell, and then everybody else couldn't defend on the perimeter. And I'm talking defensively, but offensively, it was like he was their only on-ball creator. Remember that team? And so we kind of look like that right now because, you know, nobody is close to being the self-creator that Fox and Malik Monk are. And so that's probably why they've lost a few games lately. As far as the whole season is concerned, we're just poor defensively. We're better than last year, but our defense is just downright awful at times. Like you guys, we would build 20-point leads, and I think we're ranked third or fourth of teams with the most big leads blown where we lose. And unfortunately, the only other teams that have done that are teams that are sub 500. So, like, we're the only playoff team that's in that.
Oh, no, group. Warriors were up there too. I think if it was like teams with leads of 12 or more that lost, the Warriors led the league in that
yeah, category. It's beyond frustrating. It's like, so I never felt good when we'd be up 20. It's like, no, nah, yeah, this is, you know, as they say, fool's gold. And so, yeah, that's one of our issues. We've gotten better, but yeah, sometimes our rotations are just piss poor. And, you know, I think we have a lot more better on ball defenders now, but off ball, you know, teams can put us in the blender and get easy points. And like I said earlier, there's that thing where, for whatever reason, most teams always shoot far above their average from the arc when they play us, especially at home. We have this kind of this joke where it's like, I feel like we want our fans to wear the opposing team's jersey so they think they're on the road, because we always play better on the road. You know what I mean? So yeah, that's mostly it. It's, you know, at times I felt like we would get a little too one-dimensional at the end of games. Everybody knows that if Fox and Malik Monk are going to be on the floor together, the ball is going to go to one of those two. And, you know, I'd say most of the time they're unstoppable because they kind of have the psychic connection, Kentucky brothers and whatnot. But there are times where they're just a little too predictable and they don't spread the ball as much as they should. So there's that. And then we, you know, it was hard for us to adjust when Herter was out as well. So that kind of messed things up with our rotations and trying to figure out, well, who was going to shoot the ball for us and all that. So just so many things this year.
Is there a specific position that you feel like you guys have the most difficulty stopping?
Yeah, it's just really athletic wings. That's really hard. And if they have like a 1-2 punch of either two athletic wings or maybe a really good point guard in a wing, and you already know who I'm describing, right? It's going to be a tough battle for us. So Dallas, Kyrie, and Luka, we all know what a load Luka is. And then Kyrie is tough to guard as well. The Pelicans have Zion and BI, Brandon Ingram. That's tough. So yeah,
you can even throw Trey Murphy and Herb Jones up there with athletic wings too. Maybe not like
right. Well, defensively, but like offensively, you know, Zion's a load. So let's say we put Keegan on BI, and so you know maybe he neutralizes BI, which he's not, because Brandon Ingram always goes on a heater against us. And then who do we have to put on Zion? I mean, sure, Harrison Barnes can maybe slow them down a little bit, but you know, he's serviceable, lost a step.
But not elite. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he like Harrison Barnes to me in the Kings fans, the fan base, I would say 70%. They want him gone. They're really tough on him, which is really unfortunate because, well, tell me who could take its place. You know what I mean? He's serviceable. I think he'd be great off the bench, but unfortunately, he starts for us. And so that's tough. And I think he could guard like maybe half the wings in our league, but then the other half that are taller and more athletic. Ooh, it's a tough battle for him. But that's anybody, right? Like, unless you have an elite four, you know, those Aaron Gordons are going to be hard to match up with.
Yeah. And there's a short list of players that fit the bill that can stop them. Right. And maybe you had OG Anunoby and Siakam kind of at the top of the list that were two of the kind of sought after free agents. And we had similar issues and Warriors wanting to trade Andrew Wiggins. And you know, I had same concerns, right? Like you can't just trade your most reliable wing defender and not get something back in return that to replace that. Because it's really hard out there when you don't have good wing defenders. Your defense is gonna struggle most nights.
Exactly. So I imagine with Trace, your scheme would just be to funnel everything to him in a way.
He hasn't really proven to be like an elite shot blocker. He can at times. So they're still just trying to make sure everyone stops their man individually. And so at least having Trace on the floor allows Draymond to play away from the basket and kind of do more help in rotation. Because Trace isn't quite there yet to be like that kind of either elite rim protector or just kind of like that guy who can run free safety and clean up everyone's mistakes. Like maybe Andrew Bogut did in his early days after being traded to the Warriors. Like you could get beat and Bogut was just there to defend the rim. You weren't really worried about it. Trace isn't really there yet. But just the benefit of knowing that with Trace Jackson Davis, you still get something offensively. And then you can, one, save Draymond from having to play center and waste all his energy defending Sabonis early in the game. And then also just getting Draymond out of the action allows him to, you know, he'll defend like Harrison Barnes probably, for example, and you know, Barnes can pick his spots and be really good at times. Like, you know, he's serviceable. He's a professional. He knows, you know, he knows who he is. And yeah, I think he had some games where he like went off for 30 points this season, even, but that's not like his norm. So Draymond will probably sag off Barnes until he makes him pay with some open threes and try and help out on Fox or whoever else is getting downhill and going.
Right. So earlier you mentioned Draymond.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
And I wanted to ask you this because every time I try to ask it, I'll ask this question online. And I think you know how some of your fan base is. People seem to get really rude and they can't answer the question without either putting me down or attacking me. So it's like I stopped asking it, but I truly believe that Steph and Draymond just kind of have this symbiotic relationship where I feel like they need each other to win chips to be successful. And so can Steph Curry win an NBA championship without Draymond?
No.
Nope. Okay. Well,
the whole Warriors dynasty unlocked the summer that David Lee got hurt and Draymond Green was inserted into the starting lineup. And we never looked back since. Maybe
that's how I
maybe,
feel.
Maybe Curry could have done it, but no, I don't think they're winning four rings. Certainly not Curry at 37.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
So yeah. All right.
I mean, you know, he's got some antics for sure. He went over the top this season, obviously. You know, him and Sabonis got into it over the playoff series last year. I certainly don't support Draymond and his antics and some of the things he's done, but at the same time, respect him for some of the performances he's had on the floor and being able to make the impact he has on both ends. And he just works so seamlessly and him and Curry just complement each other so well.
I think people, they focus on all of his antics and they don't understand how smart he is as a basketball player. I think there's very few player coach types in the NBA. And I think he's kind of like one of those guys. You could argue CP3 is one of them as far as on the offensive end, where it's like having a coach on the floor. But with Draymond, I feel like, yeah, he's one of those guys with one of those basketball supercomputers in his head, and he could, you know, think about the game that quickly and react to it. And I think that's such a asset to have, but nobody ever, you know, talks about that as much as they should. And everybody thinks that Steph could do this by himself, but to have a defensive anchor like that is amazing.
Yeah, and there's plenty of Warriors fans that think that the Warriors should just run Curry 1-5 pick and rolls all game and put the ball in Curry's hands and let him go to work. It's like they don't understand. Curry doesn't want to do that. Curry wants to be off the ball, and that means you got to have somebody you can trust to run the offense and have the ball in their hands. And it went as far as in that chunk of time this season, missing Draymond Green, there were at times Curry, Chris Paul, and Podziemski on the floor at the same time because the Warriors were just trying so hard to find players to set up Curry and to get Curry off the ball. It's crazy. People just don't understand. Curry himself doesn't want the ball in his hands. And that's not like at all times. Sure, he's going to handle, but he wants to be off the ball. He wants to run around screens, pass it, get it back, and fire up a three. He doesn't want to sit there and dribble, 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 go off of the screen, have to do all this work, take guys off the dribble. He'll do it at times, but he's much more lethal when he doesn't have the ball in his hands.
Yeah, and watching Draymond and Steph just operate with each other is beautiful basketball. And I know that they have like a sixth sense with each other. I've seen Draymond pass it to Curry when nobody knew where he'd be, but only Draymond and Steph. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. And you see elements of that in Mike Brown's offense with Sabonis, right? You guys run a lot of stuff through Sabonis. He's a great passer. He's kind of like the hub at times of your offense, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, no, he is most of the time. And that's the thing, though, with Monk being out, the Monk and Sabonis pick and roll was almost unstoppable. The only reason why teams would stop it is that they spammed it too often. And so they would get used to it with the timing and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But with Monk being there, it was almost like an automatic 6 to 10 points just off the Monk and Sabonis pick and roll. Because let's say it's successful once and then they do it again, and then people would just be, you know, focus on Sabonis. So then Monk would just hit a floater and it would just be like this chess game and Monk shredding the defense. So now without him there, Keon and Sabonis are kind of developing that, but it's not as sharp. They'll get there. But yeah, it's a little rough. So
what about Fox and Sabonis? Is that not really?
No, because it's kind of interesting when we see it, we get excited, but no, it's kind of funny. Like the main person Fox's chemistry with is Malik Monk, unfortunately. And then, but I think with Fox, it's more of a drive and kick game. So he loves doing paint sprays and, you know, we all know he can pretty much get anywhere anytime he wants. So he penetrate, get to the paint. Sometimes he goes even under the basket that deep and then wrap around a pass to somebody, you know, at the slot or something. It, really incredible stuff what he does. So as far as like a two-man chemistry game, it's usually just him and Monk, maybe Keegan a little bit. But yeah, when it comes to like that telepathic deal that Draymond and Steph have, that would be De'Aaron and Monk or Sabonis and Monk and Sabonis with everybody, really. Like the two-man game with Sabonis and Herter was great as well. But again, Herter's injured and Monk is injured. So yeah, it's a little tough for us right now.
Interesting. Talk to me a little bit about Keegan Murray and kind of his ascension in year two.
It's been great. It's super exciting to watch. He has become arguably one of our best defenders. I think because of his length and his height at 6'8", I would say he is our best defender. He's gotten so good at the point of attack. And so I would say 8 times out of 10, he's taking the highest usage player on the other team. And I think because of that, and this is his first year in doing so, he's kind of taken a hit a little bit from his offense. So he's struggling with that. That's just growing pains. I think next year he'll be used to it and be able to produce like he did in his rookie year. But yeah, that's what's going on with him. His handle has gotten better, so we could actually give him the ball and let him create his own shot a little bit, you know, not against an elite defender, of course, but yeah, he can actually get his own shot now. And it's really exciting.
So would you expect Keegan Murray to be matched up with Curry then to kick things off on Tuesday?
Every now and then you're probably going to see Keon on Curry right off the bat, but yeah, Keegan on Curry is an option. And because of his length, hopefully it could bother him, Curry, a little bit. I mean, nobody really bothers Curry. Let's face it. He's unguardable if he's on a heater, right? But as far as just slowing him down and bothering him, sure. Yeah, Keegan is an option for sure.
What are your, some of your keys for the Kings?
As far as this game?
Yeah. Sorry.
I mean, it's we could talk about the basic stuff that would help any team win, right? Protecting the ball, limiting your turnovers, and whatnot. I think for us, it's it's getting Fox going and getting Sabonis going, and distributing the ball, distributing our shots fairly equally. We need to get everybody involved, and we need to find out who's actually going to perform for us in that game. We just have this bad habit of having only one or a couple of our role players stepping up, and we need to see if Barnes is going to help contribute offensively. We need to see if Keon's going to be shooting well, and then hopefully we get a little bit of our bench production going. So I think bench production is going to be key. I think winning the rebounding battle is going to be key to helping us win that game, and just not getting flustered when the game gets tough. We just have to play our game.
Yeah, Trey Lyles has been another Warriors killer, I feel like, in recent vintage. He always has a really good game. Maybe we have like a strong first quarter and kind of lock up Sabonis, and Trey Lyles comes in and like knocks down some threes and makes some tough plays, grabs some rebounds, some hustle plays.
He's our official small ball five. So yeah, we could definitely go to that. But again, it only works if he's hitting the shots.
Yeah.
Which isn't always all the time.
Is Duarte out for you guys too, or he's just out of the rotation?
He's kind of out of the rotation now. Right now. He's kind of out of the rotation right now. So it's Trey Lyles, it's Davion off the bench.
Gotcha.
And then Duarte would be like 9th or 10th man.
Yeah, for the Warriors, I think the key is going to be stopping Sabonis. I think with Fox, it's kind of similar to Curry in different ways. Like Fox is going to get to where he wants to get on the floor. You try and contest the best you can, not give him extra trips to the foul line, try to make things difficult on him that he just can't get to the rim so easily, but obviously easier said than done. I feel like the Warriors have the pieces and options to limit Sabonis, what he can do, either scoring the ball, facilitating. Looney really took him out of rhythm in that playoff series last year, kind of making him second guess that jump shot. I saw that was kind of something that he's worked on a little bit in the offseason, and in their last matchup, he was a little bit more willing to take that 15-foot jump shot or even the top of the key open threes. So I think that's going to be an interesting matchup, whether that's TJD, Draymond, or Looney defending him, kind of trying to limit Sabonis's impact, offensive rebounds, being the facilitator, and scoring in the paint.
Yeah, Sabonis's putbacks and just giving us second chance points has been huge. That's always huge for us. And yeah, that's the thing, is that he actually has a bigger bag than what we've seen. It's unfortunate, though. I think at times he forgets what he can do. He could shoot that elbow jumper if he really wants to, and we all know that he shoots threes now at a very low volume, but yeah, he could make a 15-foot jumper. It's just, he doesn't do it. For whatever reason, he's a little bit too pass first. And sometimes we think he should be a little more thirsty in getting his own shot. And so, yeah, that shot is there. They're going to sag off of him. He passed up on it way too many times in that playoff series. And I'm sure you guys noticed that as well. And his main go-to can't be done with Trace or Loon or Draymond, his little right shoulder bump and then left hook. That's not going to work, especially if you go to that way too often. He could do more than that. He just has to remember to do it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what makes this such an interesting kind of one and done type game in a series. At least you've got, at minimum 4 games to kind of test the waters in the first game, kind of figure it out, go back, watch the tape. You got everyone in your ear. Everyone's making adjustments. It's like, you don't have a lot of time in this one to make adjustments. It's you gotta come out with your best foot forward and you know, bring your A game.
Yeah, I think if anything, a lot of Kings fans, well, I think I do anyways, we really want Mike Brown to think a little bit outside the box. Sometimes I feel like he's a little too strict or beholden to his rotation. And, you know, sometimes you just got to adjust. And even though you're used to playing a particular player 20 to 15 minutes, maybe they just have to play 11 and you might have to get, you know, a taller, more physical player on whoever it is you need to guard. It's really interesting. And so I'm hoping he shows us something a little new if there needs to be. So we'll see.
So this is going back to something you said earlier. Would you have actually preferred to have been 10th so you could go on the road and play at Chase rather than
No. I'm glad we're at home and I'm glad our fans get to have at least one more game for the season. You know, it's kind of a joke that I feel like we perform better on the road.
Well, the Warriors have been a better road team on the season than at home, which is interesting because they were so bad on the road last year and so amazing at home. And it totally flipped this year. I mean, they finished one win over 500 at home, but they were one of the better road teams in the league. So it's kind of inexplicable. But I was feeling like they finished 10th. They're going to play whoever they're going to play on the road. And Warriors have proven all season that they're a great road team. So bring it. It's just been kind of a weird story. And it's not even just opponents shooting lights out against us. It's also just like we just seemingly don't show up to play. I'm curious to kind of dive into that some more in the future. Obviously, Chase Center is still relatively new. It's kind of a different fan base going from Oakland to San Francisco. Feeling kind of trying to figure this out. Like, are just the vibes different? Did we lose that kind of true Warriors fan base that had, you know, sat through the decades of losing? And now you've kind of got these spoiled fans who are just, you know, recent fans that are just like, you know, going to yell and criticize Steve Kerr for not putting the ball in Curry's hands because they're just used to seeing the Warriors win and be so good.
You know, that's the case. With success comes, you know, the bandwagon fans.
Yeah.
So there's exactly. A lot of fans that hopped on board after the first championship and after the second. So, and those are probably the ones that are the loudest, but the least educated. That's just how it is. Yep. Like our fans, you know, we have new fans that they thought the beam was cool. And so they're jumping on board, but you could tell that they think it's championship or nothing. You know what I mean? And it's like, guys, you don't understand. I will take a 10 games over 500 Kings team any day over what we used to have. And it's not about settling for less. It's just appreciating, you know, the building process. And we all know championship teams aren't built over two seasons, you know, unless you get a LeBron or something. But it's rare. It takes like 4 to 5 seasons to get it right.
Yeah. So that's kind of an interesting segue. My next question for you, whether it's losing in the first game or winning the first game and maybe losing in the second, like, do you think that there's pressure on Kings front office to go make kind of a splashy offseason move? Like, maybe upgrading your forward slots of Harrison Barnes. Should they not, you know, be able to kind of climb into eighth, or just kind of like what you said, it's a process, you know, whether they make it to eighth and win a series or however far they go or don't go, you know, they're already in the process of kind of building this up. You've got some good building blocks and it's just time to kind of continue to gel and chemistry and obviously not being fully healthy and you still feel pretty good about the pieces you have.
Okay. Well, first I want to track back a little bit. I am exaggerating about playing at home and not being good at home. There are 7 games over 500 in home games. So I just want to say that, but we have had some poor meltdowns at home and we've lost some totally winnable games in games we were favored in. But so, yeah, that's a bit of an exaggeration on my part, but you know, it is a thing among the fan base. As far as us building in our process, I reference this one post-practice scrum all the time, and I should probably find it before people call me a liar. But Mike Brown was quoted as saying that they wanted to run it back and they wanted to see what they could do with this core and get the most they could out of this core in a second playoff run. And then they would find out what they need to tweak and what they need to adjust as far as personnel is concerned. So, yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily pressure. It's just what you should do, right? Mm-hmm. If you have a hole in certain areas, you just have to upgrade it. So, yeah, this summer is going to be huge. The number one thing is of course, going to be re-signing Malik Monk, probably to a 2-year where we don't pay him as much in his first year. And then we, you know, unload the Brinks truck in his second year and, you know, have a contract where we could structure something and extend him after that. So, but we'll see. I don't blame him if he wants the bag or he wants his own team to run, because I think that's what teams are looking at now. They see him as a person that could run their offense because his passing is so great. But yeah, we'll see. So this summer, yeah, that's what they're going to be doing. Is I think they're happy with Keon at the two, but if they could get a lengthier person with the same defensive acumen and shooting, I think they might look into that. But the most important position that they're probably going to upgrade is the four. So Keegan's going to stay at the three, of course. And if they could upgrade Harrison Barnes, they will. I don't want to get rid of Harrison. I think he'd be amazing off the bench, kind of like our Jeff Green, if you will, off the bench, like Jeff Green was for the Nuggets. I say that all the time. But yeah, if we could get just a younger, lengthier shot blocking four, that would be amazing. But of course, those people just, you got to find them. We need to find either a diamond in the rough or a name that's just not a name yet. I truly believe there's players out there that can be the next Naz Reid or the next Jaden McDaniels. You just don't know who they are. They're because they're developing and they're going to be a player that's going to take a leap next year or the year after that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Who's the next Jalen Johnson?
Exactly. You don't know. You would have to, you know, be crazy deep into the G League or watch every team, which I know I don't have time to do. So we'll have to find out.
Interesting. Yeah. For the Warriors, there's obviously a lot on the line here. This many have said, you know, should the Warriors fail to advance out of the play-in and at least have a competitive first round series against the Thunder, it's probably blow it up time. And don't know what exactly that means. You've got Curry and Draymond are still under contract and Steve Kerr for another couple years. But Klay Thompson's going to be a free agent into the summer. The Warriors for the first time have some options, some different ways that they could go in terms of just having a little bit more flexibility. Well, they're a second apron team, but they're projected to at least get under the second apron this summer. Chris Paul's $30 million is non-guaranteed until June 28th. So between that and Klay Thompson, the final year of like Klay Thompson's $40 million plus deal, that's like $70 million coming off the books, depending on what they decide to do. Personally, I think that they've got more run in them. I think this team is maybe missing just one more reliable piece off the bench. I don't know what that kind of looks like, but needing at times they've lacked additional shooting and floor spacing players. When you traded Jordan Poole, that was really kind of the complimentary shooter floor spacer guard piece. But I just, you know, we haven't talked a lot about Chris Paul, but I just loved everything Chris Paul's brought to this team this season. One of the biggest issues the Warriors have had since since Sean Livingston retired as a reliable backup point guard in the minutes when Steph Curry isn't playing. And Chris Paul's done an incredible job at running the second unit and actually extending leads or cutting deficits when Curry sits, because that second unit is just so good. But there are times where if Steph and Clay don't have it going from three, you don't really have a third kind of true shooter. Andrew Wiggins has been really good from three in the last 30 games. He's shooting over 40%, but he's not necessarily the type of guy that's going to put up 10 threes a game. Pods and Chris Paul also, like, they'll knock down open threes. So you've got guys who can hit threes. I mean, just a couple nights ago, the Warriors put up 26 threes against the Lakers. So it's not like they can't do it, but they don't have like a Trey Murphy or a Duncan Robinson or that type of guy off the bench or in their starting unit, not named Steph or Clay, that can really get hot from three and take attention from opposing defenses.
Well, it's tough for any team, right? It's kind of like a create a player where you only have so many attributes to go around. And yeah, it's really hard. Either you get somebody who could shoot, or you get somebody who could self-create, or you get somebody who's good at defense. And it's really hard to find those guys that are good at least two of those things. And so, yeah, I think those players like Herb Jones and Trey Murphy are at a premium right now. And if you could find them in the draft, A, they're probably going to go in the first round. So you have to look out and, you know, really have great scouting to see if you could find those diamonds in the rough that you could get in the second round. And it's tough.
Yeah, and it's interesting because early in this season when Klay Thompson was struggling, it kind of felt like he did the Warriors a favor by declining that 2-year deal that was leaked that they apparently offered him. I think it was $40 million over 2 years. And he certainly played himself into more than that this summer, especially when you look at what the Suns just paid Grayson Allen. I think he just got a $70 million over four-year extension. Mm-hmm. So the market has been kind of set, and rightfully so. I don't think Clay is going to take anything less than something probably in the low to mid 20s over more than probably 2 years. So it's going to be interesting for the Warriors to kind of figure out where to go this summer. You know, even if they do make it out of the play-in, they're still going to have to figure out how to bring everyone back. They've got some decisions to make. GP2 has been injured for most of the season. That really hurts when most of your roster is veteran minimum guys and the one guy who's, you know, making $9 million isn't available. Kevon Looney looked like just an absolute steal at the front end of his $15 million over 3 years, and this season he's kind of become unplayable. Looked better as of late, but just kind of a major regression. I don't know if it was due to all the consecutive games played, but I mean, he had 3 20 rebound games in that series against the Kings. He just looked like such a foundational piece, so important to everything the Warriors are doing. And then this season, it's just, he just was played off the floor. He couldn't defend, he couldn't rebound, he couldn't score. He just hard to justify playing him at all. So it's been difficult for the Warriors trying to get production out of some of the contracts that they had signed. And then you look at Dario Saric, it's a veteran minimum signing. He was really good at the beginning of the year, and he's struggled as of late, battling with injuries. I think the passing of the Warriors assistant coach Deki kind of really hurt him and stung probably the deepest with that Eastern European connection. So he's really kind of just fallen out of the rotation completely and lost a lot of confidence in his game. So it's been interesting. The Warriors seemingly add all this kind of depth and options, but not a lot of guys who Steve Kerr could kind of call on consistently and know what to get. Kind of a lot of specialists. You know, you're going to get like one thing out of this player, but like you just said, it's so hard to find guys who can contribute in multiple categories, whether that's defense, playmaking, shooting, rebounding, playing hard, drawing charges, high IQ, et cetera.
I think we covered a lot, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a good talk. It's going to be a really good game for sure.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, no predictions. You know what I mean? Just, you know, may the best team win. You know, we'll just have to see. That'll be another discussion for another time, though, as far as when you think you'll be ready for this team, your team to be blown up. It's always fascinating because you don't want to wait too long where you can't get any assets in return. And, you know, I think it's going to be tough for the fan base because we all know once you blow up a team, you're going to be facing some tough years. But I figure you guys are a dynasty. You could live off that memory for at least 3 to 4 years, depending on how long your build's going to take. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep. So I don't want to think about that quite yet.
No. That's another conversation for another time. Actually, we should probably pencil that in for an off-season podcast because, you know, there are some months where it gets really dry as far as NBA talk is concerned in our own teams. So, yeah, that'll be an interesting discussion. But, yeah, I thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Daly. It was great to have you on.
Yeah, it was good to be on. And, again, may the best team win. I look forward to it. When our teams play, it's always, to me, state-of-the-art basketball. And
couldn't
it's
agree
a
more.
Joy to watch.
All right, man. Cheers. You have
All
a
right.
good one.
Have a good one. You too. Take care.